Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. All eyes on Tiger Woods this week, who told a packed press conference in Augusta, Georgia yesterday that he's ready to go back to the game of golf.
That first tee, I'm looking forward to it. I haven't looked forward to that tee shot in a long time. Not like this.
No doubt. Tiger Woods was an icon as big as the modern sports media celebrity endorsement complex can build them. Bigger than big. Then he fell as low as a parade of secret porn star sex and sexting can take a superstar. This hour on Point, so now what? For the man, the business of the man, and his sport. Joining me first today from Augusta is Cameron Morfitt, senior writer for Golf Magazine and Golf.com. He's been covering the Masters and was at the press conference with 200-plus reporters and Tiger Woods yesterday. Cameron Morfitt, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Mood in the room? Pack of hyenas out for flesh or Tiger rules again? How would you describe it, Cameron?
Well, I think the best word I heard to describe Tiger yesterday was disarming. I think he seemed less rehearsed and less scripted and sort of stiff. He did seem pretty human, and I actually would call it a victory for Tiger for sure in that there were actually two lines of questioning that sort of split the vote, as it were, and so there wasn't a whole lot of traction gained by those of us in the room on either line of questioning.
Two lines of questioning that split the vote. What do you mean, Cameron?
Well, you had the sex scandal, of course, mm-hmm. which has been going on for almost 5 months, and which Tiger has been fighting pretty much a losing battle to contain. And then you had the question of performance-enhancing drugs, which was brought on by his association with a Canadian doctor named Anthony Gallia, who visited Tiger 4 times at his home in Orlando. And that question had to be asked as well. Gallia is under federal investigation for allegedly distributing performance-enhancing drugs to other athletes. So both of those lines of questioning had to be explored, and it was only a 34-minute press conference. So Tiger, really, in a strange way, was helped by that.
Cameron, the drug question first. He said he's never taken any illegal drug, though this Canadian doctor visited his Orlando home on a number of occasions. Are people buying that in the golf world? Everybody talked when the scandal blew up. Everybody suddenly was talking about how impossibly buff Tiger Woods had been, that it just wasn't possible, you know, along nature's path. Are people buying it?
You know, I think at this point people don't know what to believe about Tiger. I think one of the things that's come up through all of this is how little we really knew the guy and how little we really know any of our superstars or any of our performers or entertainers. They just have, you know, we see them in a tiny little segment of their lives. Granted, they practice it and perform it many, many, many hours, but that's just a small portion of their lives. And we really, at this point, nobody really knows what to believe about Tiger. We're all just kind of, in a way, just looking forward to watching him play golf again and not really thinking about it too much for at least 4 days.
I want to get to the golf, too, but just to ask, I mean, how did the sexcapades come up, and what did he say? Did he never used the word sex in this press conference. Kind of, that's a victory in itself, I guess.
Yeah, he never did, and it was you know, it had to be talked about, and he was very contrite. He said he had done terrible, terrible things. He hasn't hid from that. He's owned up to it, which he had to do. And, you know, that took up a large portion of the 34 minutes. That was probably about half of it, if not more, was on just his reprehensible behavior, how he hurt his family, how he needs to be a better man. And he did, like I said, he seemed very disarming. And you know, you want to believe the guy, but at this point, you just really don't know what to think.
How does he look out on the golf course?
He looked a little erratic, as you would expect. He sprayed a few shots here and there, but you know what? It was only a practice round, and I think you know, he'll be fine. I think he probably will make the cut, the 36-hole cut, and so he'll get to play on the weekend. And I don't see him winning, but you know, he'll be out there, which in itself is a bit of a victory after all that's happened.
Cameron, who in Tiger's absence has stepped up here? Who's his competition?
Ernie Els is really the guy that's kind of made the biggest splash this year. He's won twice on the Florida swing, which the last guy to do that actually was Tiger himself. Ernie has been sort of out of sight for a while. He's had some family issues. His son has autism, and he's really struggled to sort of get his head around that and figure out sort of how to handle it. He started a foundation. And I think really now Ernie is getting back to the golf part, and he's starting to really play very well, and he's never won the Masters. That would be a really great story this week if he were to win it.
The choice of coming back at the Masters doesn't seem arbitrary. It's a very controlled environment there, right? I mean, we hear about how the crowds are very policed along the greens.
Absolutely. You know, they talk about the Masters being the toughest ticket in sports. Everybody's afraid to lose their ticket if they do anything out of line. It's very, very sort of strict here. And in fact, the press conference itself yesterday was the toughest ticket in press conferences. You actually had to have a little thing that looked sort of like a coat claim check to get into the room. And, the whole thing has been very, very highly policed and very regimented.
Are reporters afraid to put tough questions to Tiger Woods, afraid they'll be banished from the questioning circle?
No, I don't think so, because nobody really has much access to him in the first place, so there's really nothing to lose at this point. And I don't think that the questions were soft yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happened was that these two line of questioning sort of split the vote. And as you know, in when you're asking somebody questions, you're not likely to really get anything revelatory on the first or second time that you hit that subject matter. You've got to go a little bit deeper, and you've got to sort of come at it from several angles sometimes. And the fact was, there really just wasn't time to do that. He was only up there for 34 minutes.
Cameron, what's it been like to cover golf in Tiger's absence these last months?
You know, I think the weirdest tournament was probably the one at Torrey Pines, which comes very, very early in the season, back in January or maybe early February. But it's usually the first tournament of the year for Tiger. He's won on that golf course so many times, most notably, obviously, the 2008 U.S. Open when he won on his bad left knee. And that was odd. His absence really was very, very palpable there. And but other than that, it's sort of been business as usual. The only thing is, the other players have had a real sense of Tiger fatigue. They've been getting asked about Tiger Woods for so long, and they just don't know what to say. And frankly, there's really nothing they can say. The only thing they can do is put their foot in their mouth. So they're all just thrilled that he's back and that he went back and took care of this yesterday with the press.
Cameron Morfitt, senior writer for Golf Magazine and Golf.com in Augusta, Georgia today. Cameron, thanks very much for joining us.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Here's Tiger Woods talking about why he spent 45 days in rehab in the press conference yesterday.
It was to take a hard look at myself, and I did. And I've come out better. I'm certainly a much better person for it than I was going in. And does that mean I'm ever going to stop doing that? No. I got to still continue with my treatment. And that's going forward. That's not going to continue. That's not going to stop in the near future for sure.
A reporter asked him what he went to treatment for. Tiger said that's personal. He told a reporter what his expectations are for this week.
Nothing's changed, Salty. I'm trying to go out there and win this thing.
I'm trying to go out there and win this thing. Joining me now from New York is Jonathan Mahler. He's contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine and author of the book The Challenge. His April 4th cover story for the magazine was The Tiger Bubble. Jonathan Mahler, welcome to On Point.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And with us from Northridge, California, is Sandy Banks, columnist for the Los Angeles Times. She's been writing about the Tiger Woods scandal. Her March 19th column on Tiger was headlined, Burning in the Public Flame. Sandy Banks, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you very much for having me.
Jonathan Mahler, you laid out in your big magazine piece what an incredible business empire Tiger sort of straddled. Will it, can it come back?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, I think, you know, certainly as we're already seeing, there's a huge burst of interest in him and you know, and I guess by association, golf right now. You know, and I don't think there's any reason to think that assuming that Tiger kind of continues to play the same sort of golf that he was playing before all this, which is to say he remains the sort of the dominant player in the game, that people won't continue to watch golf tournaments every weekend when he plays. And really, you know, twice as many people watch golf tournaments when he does play. So, but the bigger question, I think, is whether all of the corporations that sort of underwrite golf, both the PGA Tour and of course that sponsor Tiger, are and that advertise during golf tournaments, et cetera, are going to be as willing to pour money into the game as they were, you know, during the great Tiger era that now seems to have come to an end, though certainly a new Tiger era has begun.
And Sandy Banks in California, I want to dig into it with you, but in a word, I take you saying that when it comes to all the personal stuff, at the end of the day, it's nobody's business but his own, Sandy.
Yeah, I think so. It's his family's business, and it's his business. And you know, if he's not going to show up for a tournament because he's off doing something, that's golf's business. But I mean, I think that the idea that he is some godlike person because he's a good golfer is where we went wrong with it.
We're talking this hour about Tiger Woods, the man, the business, the golfer, back on the greens at the Masters. Here's Tiger Woods at his press conference yesterday in Augusta, Georgia. One reporter asked how he had felt entitled to certain behaviors before he got caught.
The way I was thinking was not correct. And as part of you know, where I was at, I was rationalizing, I was denying, in total denial at times. Whatever I did was, I lied to myself, I lied to others, and just because I was winning golf tournaments doesn't mean a thing. The way I was thinking caused so much harm with the people that I love and cared about the most on this planet.
Tiger Woods, yesterday, back at the Masters. Sandy, I want to get more from you, but Jonathan, if you would, describe to us what went into creating the icon, the image we know as Tiger Woods. How deliberate was that?
Yeah, it was very deliberate. I mean, it was probably as deliberate as the creation of any sports icon has been. I mean, far more so, I would say. I mean, he's, you know, all big star athletes are to some degree insulated and mysterious people, or at least mm-hmm. you know, have sort of hidden personas. But in Tiger's case, I mean, really, we learned virtually nothing about him that we didn't get from television commercials. I mean, he was notoriously unavailable to the media when he did speak at press conferences before and after tournaments. He would say very little about his personal life, and instead we were sort of left with commercials, a lot of commercials that really sort of built him up as an image. So that was really our picture of Tiger, that and of course what he did on the golf course, and in some ways the sort of tableau on the 18th green when he won a tournament. You would see, you know, before his father died, you would see his father and then of course his wife and then one child and then two children. So we did in a sense get that sort of glimpse of his personal life, but that was really the extent of it. And the truth is that the tabloids weren't very interested in him, so there was no sort of muckraking going on there. air. So we had our commercials, we had our images of him from the golf course, we had him sort of strolling fairways and hitting tee shots and putts, and that was it. So this has really, you know, we still, I think, to a large extent, don't know who Tiger Woods really is, but
and the value of all that,
we know who he isn't, I guess one could say now.
The financial value of all that to Tiger Woods himself crossed $1 billion, the biggest ever for any athlete, you write.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it was a massive, massive industry. And, you know, and as I wrote in the Times Magazine, I sort of, the metaphor I use is it was a bubble. I mean, it was, Tiger was, drew so much interest and investment to golf that it had really virtually the same effect as the real estate bubble or the tech bubble or any other economic bubble. It was money was pouring in because this one athlete was so kind of heads in, both because he was so much better than everyone else, but also because of his unique profile and because he was an emotional player. He was an exciting player to watch, which is unusual in golf. Because of all these reasons, he had a kind of, there were all these both economic and kind of cultural expectations placed on him, that he would really sort of transform golf, both economically but also culturally, that he would bring new people, a new demographic to the game, that he would make golf cool, that he would bring it to inner cities.
Which made big business. Sandy Banks, I think where it gets interesting, and I'd like to just settle in on it with you for a little bit here, is, you know, we live in these kind of blended realities today, where there's people right around us that we really know, and then there's a media world full of people and images and icons who we know by what we're shown. So when the wall gets pierced between the two and one comes tumbling down, on the one hand, you write, the rest of us ought to butt out and stop trying to peer into the heart of the man. On the other hand, he's been presented to us for years and with at great profit as a certain kind of guy. So what do we do with that, Sandy?
Well, I think that we recognize that presentation is about marketing and it's about money, and it's not about reality. I mean, I think as Jonathan said, you know, he kept himself private, so all we knew was what we saw. But I would say that's really all we're entitled to know, and that a good athlete, a good golfer, or a good basketball player doesn't give up his life and his privacy. We're not entitled to know what kind of man he is. And I guess what troubles me so much about all of the reading of his interviews and all is when people say he wasn't humble enough, or he wasn't, you know, he didn't give us the answers we want about the women and what he did. And, you know, he's a golfer, and he's a spokesman for certain, you know, products. And if they decide he doesn't fit our image anymore, that's what they should do. But for the rest of us, you know, to believe that we knew him, that's our fallacy. That's our lunacy. You know, we had that in Los Angeles with Kobe Bryant, with the fall of Kobe Bryant, who was our hero. And then to find that the rape charges in Colorado and all. And he was smart to give us, you know, the mea culpa right away that made us comfortable again. And Tiger hasn't done that. He hasn't done what we need to be comfortable with who he is. But to me, the lesson for us is get over it. We recognize that we don't know these people, and you know, accept them as what they are. And it's interesting, when I talk to people about it, the golfers tend to all say, oh, move on. I want him back on the course.
Well, of course, but they do. They're going to make a lot more money when he's there. He's pumped up the purses like crazy.
I mean the regular golf guy, the guy next door who plays
okay,
golf
the duffer,
Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They admire him as a golfer. They want to see him playing. And they're not interested so much anymore in, you know, how many women, what time, what did you say to your wife, what are you going to do now, what happened in sex rehab. You know, I think that's the rest of us who like the soap opera kind of.
But still, I wonder, when you say we don't know these people, and yet millions, I don't know, billions have swirled around presenting them to us in a certain way. Does that leave no claim that the public can kind of make on what they stand for? If it doesn't, I mean, gosh, what a split screen we've got in life. We live in a world soaked in commerce and image. It means nothing?
Well, I don't know. I think that's a question that should go to the advertisers, not to Tiger Woods. I mean, I think they marketed him for their benefits, so that benefits would accrue to their product, and that is commerce. And if we really believe that, you know, they're marketing these products to us because, you know, we really need them, or you know, we should invest in them because they're good for us, as opposed to they're trying to sell a product. And he becomes a part of their process. And I think looking at it anymore, I'm going to buy this because I think Tiger is a wonderful person and he wears this watch. You know, then we've bought into a fantasy and illusion. And you know, I just think that's, marketing is doing their job. Tiger's doing their job. To be able to separate reality from fantasy.
Not easy when we are so immersed in it. Tiger himself pushing in a more humble direction in his comments yesterday, saying he's going to have a different way on the course.
I'm actually going to try and obviously not get as hot when I play. But then again, when I'm not as hot, I'm not going to be as exuberant either. You're not going to see, I can't play one without the other. And so I made a conscious decision to try and tone down, you know, my negative outbursts. And, you know, consequently, I'm sure that my positive outbursts will be calmed down as well. And that's just trying to be more respectful of the game.
Tiger Woods yesterday in Augusta on his new, more respectful of the game way. Jonathan Mahler, Sandy Banks, standby. We've got a lot of listeners who want to join us. Eric in Boston. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I just want to comment that at the end of the day, I don't see this affecting Tiger's branding. I think that it fits right along with the narrative of popular culture today with the celebrity rehabs and whatnot. I think that, is in part because people are done idealizing our superstars, mm-hmm. and they're looking for a more rich human experience, which is what Tiger is describing. And his reaction to the situation, you know, he's manning up, he's coming to the existential realization that winning Masters and tournaments isn't the important thing, that it's more of a personal human experience that he's dealing with. And I think that's going to do nothing but help his branding at the end of the day.
Eric, thanks very much for your call. Jonathan, how about just on that? First of all, Eric sees him manning up here, which I guess means, you know, honestly confronting and conveying his life. At the same time, he's hired Ari Fleischer, who was White House spokesperson, as the country went to war with Iraq. I mean, he's got some very pro advice on how to present himself to the country. Do we have any claim to see the real Tiger? Does it matter?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that there is, you know, obviously this great natural curiosity, and I do think, you know, in some ways, the way we looked at Tiger and the way we kind of allowed this mythology to kind of get created was there was something almost old fashioned about it. It almost sort of harkened back to a time before the media asks such probing personal questions. You know, the best example I can think of is say, you know, someone like Joe DiMaggio. You know, we the way Joe DiMaggio was treated during his era was so vastly different from how we treat celebrity athletes today.
You mean the god who can't be questioned or touched?
Exactly, and you know, and of course, since then, people have come to see DiMaggio in a different light, and I think in some ways, people feel as though they were fooled in some sense.
But didn't Tiger kind of get that treatment until it all came apart?
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I think in some ways, there was something kind of old-fashioned about how we looked at Tiger that we kind of let those layers of mythology build essentially, and those layers of mythology were built by, as I said, his sort of tournament play, and of course the commercials. Largely the Nike commercials.
And what about the branding now? Who's stuck Jonathan? Who hasn't? Where's the branding go?
Well, only a handful of companies have stuck with him. I mean, the most notably Nike. Now, there are different ways to look at why Nike stayed with him. I mean, one is you know, sort of in for a penny, in for a pound. I mean, they are in deep with Tiger Woods. He is Nike Golf. They launched an entire golf division on his back. I mean, Nike was not in golf before Tiger Woods came along. They decided to get into golf because of Tiger. So you can say that essentially they are just too deeply invested in him. Now Nike would argue that the reason why they are still with Tiger is that they are about performance. You know, that these other brands like Accenture, maybe about image, Accenture being mm-hmm. a financial services company that dropped him. Mm-hmm. That Nike would say a company like Accenture is about image, whereas they are about performance. And as far as they're concerned, Tiger is going to continue to perform and be a dominant golfer, which, you know, fair point. Now, in terms of kind of what the listener said had to say about, you know, Tiger manning up and you know, are we you know, are we looking for a new kind of hero now, a new kind of icon now? Well, I mean, certainly his, if you just look at his approval ratings, I mean, they are way, way down from where they were before this scandal hit. I mean, he was, you know, the world's most popular athlete, and he is now, you know, far from that. Now that could change. That could change now that he has, you know, made his first kind of mea culpa, and now that he gave this press conference where did seem to be some genuine contrition. But you know, I do think that it's maybe a stretch to think that. You know, that people are going to be, you know, satisfied with just this. And I think it's also a bit of a stretch to suggest that, you know, Tiger's kind of manning up and doing the right thing. I mean, Tiger didn't have a whole lot of choice here. And, you know, there is also sort of a bottom line element to this, which is that, you know, these companies who had invested in him lost, you know, millions and millions of dollars, which means that stockholders lost millions and millions of dollars. So, you know, did he have a responsibility to apologize to the public? You know, not necessarily, but did he have a responsibility to apologize to his sponsors? Well, I think on some level, yeah. I don't think that had to be a public apology, but it certainly had to be an apology.
All about the coin right there. Let's go to caller Sandy.
Can I just say something?
Sure,
about
Sandy,
Eric?
Please.
I mean, I think we as journalists are pretty cynical about a lot of this, but Eric raises a really interesting point that I hear from a lot of people about the issue of manning up and all. And, you know, he went to rehab and he did all these things because he had to, but I think a lot of people watch him, and I think Eric used the phrase human drama, and are drawn to that. And if you don't think there are a lot of men out here watching this and saying, mm-hmm. there, but for the grace of God, go I.
Yep.
I think there is an element of identification, respect, that people are beginning to feel, particularly watching a new Tiger yesterday when he was more humble. And, you know, this could be, for all the talk about what it's doing to his career and his income and all that, for him as a man and as a human being, this could be a very powerful, profound, positive thing that is happening in his life at the end of the day. And I think that he kind of expressed, even when he talked about in the clip you played, about being not so hot-headed on the mm-hmm. You know, green. I think you know, there are people that look at this as a human drama and appreciate what he's going through. And I, you know, we don't hear from them a lot, but I think they're out there.
Oh, I'm sure they're out there, but that's where it just gets confusing to me, trying to be actually the opposite of cynical here, because on the one hand, you say, you know, all that was his media image. You don't know the man. Don't judge him. On the other hand, people can't help it. We're marinated in these huge media right. figures, and people do get invested in their personal stories. And then if it's just a bunch of Ari Fleischer kind of spin that we're living in, who knows
maybe
what it is?
It's not. I mean, maybe it's the man lost his father, you know, the closest person
fact.
In the world
mm-hmm.
to him. And, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, some guy watching it who also lost a father feels different about it than somebody else. I just think he's been through a lot as a person that we really can't judge because we don't know. We just don't know him that way. And I would say that's really not our place. And I think Eric kind of evidenced a kind of a graciousness that I think is more is a bigger, you know, streak through the human nature and the observers than we're always giving credit for.
Jonathan, cynical to keep a kind of cocked eye, a kind of skeptical eye on Tiger now, or gracious to, you know, accept his sort of mea culpa?
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you know, anything that's been said sort of in defense of him. I mean, I do think that, you know, let's certainly you know, give him a chance. And as I said, there was genuine contrition, and it's true he has been through a lot. And you know, and who knows whether you know, if this is sort of a really humbling experience for Tiger and a grounding experience, then great. But I mean, I do think that we as journalists at this point, I mean, in as much as this is a story worth covering, the personal real life of Tiger Woods, I do think we have a responsibility to be, you know, if not cynical, then at least you know, sort of scrupulous and kind of keep a close eye on what's going on, because yes, I mean, we had that, you know, let's not forget that we had that incredibly scripted first public apology, which was where you know, very few members of the media were even permitted to attend, and no questions were allowed.
Friends and staff in the audience. Hold the thought, Jonathan. He's been through a lot, but wow, what a story that his family's been through as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. was an audio of a voicemail message from Tiger Woods to one of his mistresses, Jamie Grubbs, released in December. In the message, he pleads to her to take your name off your phone so his wife, Elin, wouldn't be able to discover his infidelity if she called the number. Shortly after its release, the message was remixed into a song on the internet called Tiger Woods Voicemail Slow Jam Remix.
Can you take your name off your phone? My wife took my phone and made me call. Take your name off your phone. You gotta do this for me. Just have it as a number. Take your name.
You want to hear the price of celebrity? There it is, right there. Of course, 15 Affairs can carry a price as well. Yesterday in Augusta, Tiger was asked what he thought about sponsors dropping him during the scandal and why he might be attracted to sponsors now.
And hopefully I can prove to the other companies going forward that I am a worthy investment, that I can help their company, help your company grow and represent them well. I felt like I was representing companies well in the past, but then again, I wasn't doing it the right way because of what I was engaged in.
And off we go. Tiger back at the Masters. Let's go to Cottontown, Tennessee, and Linda. Linda, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I just have a comment about Tiger Woods. I think that the American people are the most voyeuristic people in the universe. The family owes us nothing. Tiger, his golf game, is a product. You wouldn't ask the maker of Raisin Bran cereal who you slept with. So, America, you just need to forget about it. Enjoy his golfing. That's all it is.
Linda, we've got it, and you're quite right. I've never thought of asking the maker of Raisin Bran who they slept with. I appreciate your call. A lot of comments on the web here from Eric. It says, it's not Tiger's VIP hooking? I'm not sure. It's the hypocrisy in the attitude that you can create an extremely false public image and profit greatly from it while using people in your life as props. Rob says, if you believe Mr. Woods has repented and on the straight and narrow path, I have a bridge to sell you. Daniel says, we know little about any celebrity, and it's sad. We want to know more. Just because someone sells their image for products doesn't mean we have the right to own them and their personal life. Jonathan Mahler, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I do think that, you know, to some extent, what's interesting that does seem to have changed since yesterday is that, you know, ironically, I think that the way that the tabloids have hounded Tiger has actually kind of begun to turn him a little bit into a victim. I mean, we are seeing, as we've just heard, some expressions of sympathy toward him now, really for the first time. But again, I think that you know, what we saw yesterday was quite a bit different from what we saw both in his sort of first public appearance, his mea culpa, and which, as I mentioned before, was just incredibly scripted and controlled, and where he essentially brought in the reporters he wanted and family members as
employees.
As props,
mm-hmm.
treated them as props and employees, exactly. And then you had the 5-minute interviews where he handpicked the two reporters at the Golf Channel and ESPN who would do them. So, you know, so initially at least there was this sense that that, you know, Tiger wasn't going to come out of this changed at all, that he was going to continue to kind of try to control everything, which was his sort of hallmark before. But it is true that what we saw yesterday was a slight, somewhat different Tiger Woods. I mean, he wasn't totally forthcoming, but you know, he did for the most part answer the questions that were put to him.
But who knows? I mean, whether that's Tiger Woods or whether that's hired a higher class of PR guy, Ari Fleischer coaching very well.
That's right, and I think that as I was saying earlier, I mean, mm-hmm. I think that we as have responsibility to kind of keep pushing and keep trying to get those to find answers to those questions. Again, you know, in as much as this is a story worth covering, so you know that's you know, all we can do really is speculate, and you know, now we have a little more to go on. We have a 34-minute Q&A with the press to go on,
and soon we'll have a whole golf tournament, at least as long as Tiger's in it. Sandy, does it matter if it's professionally coached or if it's Tiger the genuine article? Does it matter?
Well, no, I would be professionally coached if I was going to go before a big kid.
200 and yeah, whatever report.
Yeah, I mean, I would be professionally coached. And I guess, you know, I just don't know exactly what we want from him right now. I mean, even reading our column today, Bill Plasky, who is a wonderful columnist, and said, you know, that he's now, how do we know he's still telling the truth? And it wasn't just, he just didn't give us enough. And, you know, I guess, what do we want him to break down and sob and tell us every detail of every dalliance? You know, I don't know at this point what it would take. He answered the questions that I think we really do have a responsibility to ask about the performance-enhancing drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And all. He answered those.
Yeah.
He said, no, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we could have asked. I mean, you know, a reporter could certainly be right to continue asking it over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at some point, I mean, I think he's, I didn't get the feeling, and again, this is just me, that yesterday was some kind of act. I thought he was, you know, as forthright as he had determined to be, and that he answered the questions, you know, and he got a little testy at some point. Somebody asked about his family. No, they're not here.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all very human, too. So, you know, I think if he's coached and if he has people saying, here's how you want to appear, well, I understand why when I read the next day's press coverage of him, you know. Yeah, I don't fault him for that.
We're in the media world, but it's inhabited by people. But then, how real? Salvatore in Augusta, Georgia. Salvatore, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for letting me comment.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate Sandy's comments. My thoughts are, I just feel like his personal life is not something that needs to be going through. I don't think anybody has a responsibility to cover his personal life. He's a golfer. He's not a minister or some sort of character type person that his character is what bases his performance. He's a golfer, you know, and I agree 100% with Sandy. And, you know, I just think that the more this goes on, the more folks are going to start realizing that. And when he starts winning and playing golf again, it'll all kind of start wrapping up.
So you're happy to see him on the golf course in Augusta. Is it important for Augusta, Salvatore? It must matter economically for your town.
Oh, absolutely. We need Tiger here. We need him here. He brings a ton of money to the town, and, you know, he brings a ton more people. You know, you got people paying for all sorts of things that they wouldn't be paying for. You know, companies paying for renting houses from people, and, you know, that floods back into the economy once those people spend that money. And yeah, it's huge for Augusta. We want Tiger here, and that, you know, I really don't care what he does with his personal life. That's his business, and he's got to answer to his family, and that's his problem.
Do you want to see him back up on the billboard, Salvatore, when you walk through the airport or drive down the road or open your magazine? Are you ready to see?
We got Phil Mickelson up there right now. I'd rather see Tiger Woods. So,
Salvatore, thanks for your call. Let's get Karen in Greediger, Iowa. Karen, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to say that part of what keeps us in the line of society holds us accountable for what we do. I'm very sad to hear that Nike's continuing to endorse him. With that comes, you know, no one holds him accountable. And there are many, many problems that transpire from affairs. There are people with AIDS as a result of affairs. And when you have an affair, many times children are drugged through the mud and the muck in a divorce and throughout their lives because a marriage ended very sadly, and it was very, very bad. But anyways, I am going to boycott Nike, and I am watching what's going on, and I do want to hold society accountable for what they do. I am so sorry to hear of all of the people, and I want to apologize personally if you have gotten AIDS or you have been affected by affairs. As far as Tiger Woods, I don't hate him, I don't really judge him. I just want to hold him accountable so that in the future he acts better and that we don't have these problems in the future.
Karen, let me ask you, our caller Salvatore says, look, he's not a minister, he's not a man of the cloth. I mean, the Catholic Church is being, you know, punched all over the place here, but people understand they've got a special moral claim to their authority. Tiger's just a guy, so is the accountability requirement the same? Is it because he's a celebrity in the public eye?
Tell that to the women who have AIDS and mm-hmm. tell that to the children of divorce where affairs are involved.
I hear it loud and clear, Karen, and I appreciate your call. Thanks for it. Let me get another here from John in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I feel a little hypocritical sitting here for the past X number of minutes because in as a victim of infidelity myself some 30 years ago, and I'm now married well over 38 years.
Meaning your former wife stepped out on you?
I walked in on her with another couple.
Okay.
It goes to the heart immediately. It's devastating. But if you truly love the person that you're with, you get over it. And I am so glad that I was able to, with the help of the Lord, just get over it and move on. And as far as covering all of this stuff, I love listening to NPR. I love your show, Tom. Mm. But we're spending way too much time on something that is nobody else's business but Elon and Tiger's.
Well, I appreciate your call, John, and your thought there. I mean, we thought a lot about it. We'd done one other show on Tiger. What brought us back to it was that we live in such a media age where our lives get entwined with these media figures, and trying to understand what boundaries are there and when does old-style accountability, as Karen was talking about, come in, and when doesn't it? Because, after all, it's just a face on a billboard or a face in a magazine. But I appreciate your call. Sandy, there's two very different views of infidelity, which has been put in the spotlight. Karen said, think of the victims and hold the man accountable. You know, our caller John saying, forgive, move on.
Well, and I think that John's talking about, for instance, that in that relationship, he said that's what he had to do to get over. And the other caller was talking about holding him accountable. And I think we did. I think that the advertisers that dropped him made him accountable. We don't want you representing us. I think his wife moved out, and you know, she's holding him accountable. As far as us, the spectators, the onlookers, the voyeurs, as one of the callers mm-hmm. said, I'm not sure, you know, again, what do we require? What does accountability require of him to us? What does he owe us? To come out and say, look, boys and girls, what I do. I don't know. That's what I think is I mean, I think they're both right. It's a personal issue between Tiger and his wife, and it's a horrible thing that he did.
Let's go to Kelly in Framingham, Massachusetts. Kelly, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just am always amazed, you know, when we have these icons, whether it's, you know, Bill Clinton or Kobe Bryant, or you mentioned, you know, Catholic priests.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same sort of story, and we get wrapped up in their loftiness and then their fall from grace. And, you know, I just think the overall message is that, you know, we all err, we all have our demons, you know, we all go through ups and downs in life. And, you know, I would like, you know, as a person and as, like, an emotional quality, just to see Tiger Woods being able to redeem himself and, you know, learn the overall human lesson from this, you know, fall that he made have fallen way farther than maybe the rest of us. But, you know, it's the similar pattern that we all have. And, you know, my father asked me whether I'd be rooting for him this weekend, and I find myself, you know, wanting, you know, taking him as an amazing golfer, amazing talented athlete, but he's also a man. He's just a person. We all have, you know, have our hard times through life and make our mistakes, you know.
So are you willing, Kelly, to believe in him as or consider him as a man, or is he just a media icon? You know, views kind of go back and forth all hour, whether we should take him seriously, take any lessons from this, just see him as a guy on a billboard, see him as a real person. What's your inclination?
I think he's both. I think he is who he is as a person, and he needs to go through his own journey and learn from this, as we all learn through life when we make a mistake. But he's also what the media creates him to be, and we want to create these men up on high or these women and, you know, look to them because maybe it carries for us some sort of wish that we can be this without any sort of flaw. But everybody has a flaw, and that's the more valuable picture. It's a more of a complete view of a human. We can't always have it all. You know, you're told you can have all this money and be this constructed form of a person and your personality, but it's not really who you are.
Kelly, we've got it. Our time is short. One more. Ed in Middlebury, Vermont. Ed, you're on the air. Our time is short, friend. Hello, Ed? Oh, Ed may be gone. Jonathan, where do you come down on this? You know, how do we look at Tiger? Media creation or man? Simple man.
Well,
good meal.
I mean, I think that there is, a distinction that I think I want to make anyway, which is, I think, there is this voyeurism that we've talked about, and this purient kind of lurid detail of Tiger's many affairs, and do I think that is kind of enhancing our understanding of the man necessarily? No. And I think that this idea of, certainly I'm not sitting in judgment on him, nor I think should anyone be. On the other hand, I think it's perfectly natural for us, I certainly feel it, to want to understand who this man is. Who is Tiger Woods? Who is this extraordinary athlete who has from this from the age of two been destined for golf greatness, was shaped into this person very deliberately by his father, an ex-Green Beret, who then marries this beautiful woman, and then does commit these sort of epic infidelities. But again, leaving aside the details of these affairs, but he amazingly is actually somehow able to pull them all off as well without getting caught, and this behavior completely contradicting his disciplined behavior on the golf course, as well as the image of him that we have seen as a sort of upstanding moral person in public. And I mean, I think it's a fascinating story, and I think that our curiosity and our desire to know him, to understand him, and yes, he's human and he's flawed like all of us. He is also this extraordinarily gifted athlete and competitor, and I want to understand that. I want to get at that, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that kind of curiosity. And frankly, the alternative is to treat him as we treated, as I said earlier, Joe DiMaggio, which is to not really scratch beneath the surface.
You and a lot of others wondering, maybe it's a story as old as Homer's Odyssey, but in the media age, we're in the middle of it. Jonathan Mahler, Sandy Banks at the LA Times, thank you to you both. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.